Hi everyone, thank you so much for being the loyal listeners of this podcast. My name is Thomas Noto Suoneto, the founder and host of this podcast. For you, the new listeners, this podcast is designed to bring to you candid and constructive discussion on many important international issues, from politics, economy, law, security, feminism, and others. And usually, it's conducted through interviews with so many important and outstanding foreign policy stakeholders, from academicians, researchers, ambassadors, diplomats, and even young foreign policy analysts or enthusiasts. Drop me a chat on my LinkedIn and be connected at Thomas Noto Suoneto, and also drop us a message if you have any ideas for the further episodes at Foreign Policy Talks Podcast on Instagram. So enjoy the conversation. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, the listeners of Foreign Policy Talks podcast, wherever you are. Today, I'd like to continue the series of conversation talking about the Ukraine-Russia crisis, which is still a big issue today, right? And people are still questioning when it's going to be ended, right? And how. But today, a very special conversation is designed to really understand about Indonesia's position and deeply on Indonesia's feeling towards Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And I'm just surprised with an article that recently published, in many, it's published in one specific portal, but it's been shared by many people on WhatsApp group, on social media, and so on and so forth. And I'm humbled and honored of having the one of the the author of this interesting article. His name is Radityo Dharmaputra. Let me greet him. How are you, Radityo?
Thank you so much. Great. I'm great. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone.
Right. So, Radityo Dharmaputra, you are now studying in Estonia, one of countries in the Eastern Europe, and you're also the lecturer of international relations at Universitas Erlangga in Indonesia. So you are now based in Estonia, right?
Yes, I'm currently in the second biggest city in Estonia, called Tartu, and very small town.
Right. So you just wrote an interesting article titled "Why So Many Indonesian Back Up Russia," and in this case, right? But before that, yes. Maria, let me ask you if you happy to share the feelings of people there in Eastern Europe after Russia attacked Ukraine.
Yes. First of all, thank you so much for the invitation to join the podcast. Very honored. And also regarding this feeling around Eastern Europe, I can say that in Estonia, at least, the fear has been growing since 2014. Estonian defense minister and also this kind of defense college organize every year an annual Russia conference where they talk about the potential Russian attack to Estonia. And now that their fear has been materialized in Ukraine, they are actually, at least in the government, they're trying to calm the people. But you know that there are a lot of Ukrainians as well in Estonia. And a lot of my friends are from Ukraine here. They're very confused and sad about the situations. And also, there are a lot of refugees coming to Estonia at the moment. So you know that even though the situation is currently is calm and I would say composed, but it's kind of brewing. So this fear and anxiety of what will happen next, that's always been there, but now it's even worse than before.
Wow. But if I'm not mistaken, Radityo, so Estonia is part of NATO, right? And
yes.
How do people there feel about the response of NATO so far? Because you know that they are not involving directly, right? to defend against Russia. But how do people feel about NATO's response?
I mean, most of them, again, because we are in Estonia, is a small country, so they feel the fear is even worse than the big countries in NATO. So they are actually trying to push, at least in the academic sense, my professors, lecturers, fellow PhD students, and also MA students, BA students, they're trying to push the government to at least do something, to say to NATO that they need to do more. Because again, if Russia's invasion is going, let's say, unpunished, then Estonia might be next, because we are close, very close to the border. We are the buffer now between NATO and Russia. So they're actually trying to say, to push NATO into more aggressive posture, but you know, it probably won't happen in the foreseeable future, but at least people are criticizing NATO. Some of my lecturers saying that, okay, NATO should have done more to help Ukraine. No-fly zone has been always discussed and supported by at least some of the lecturers here. Of course, you know that there are people that urge cautions, that you have to be aware that Russia will respond to NATO's, let's say, provocation. But it's at least if you understand the position of a small country located right next door to Russia, that is exactly what happened here. So they're trying to push into more aggressive posture of NATO, but yeah, I don't think it will happen too.
Right, interesting. But as you know already, and you have highlighted in your pieces, that the feeling of Indonesians are quite different with people there in Eastern Europe, right? I'm not sure whether it's because of the geographical position or history or foreign policy, international engagement with Russia and so on and so forth. That's why I want to ask you about this. So you wrote an interesting article again on analyzing why Indonesians pick up Russia. But you pointed out some surprising facts that much of the Indonesian public, especially those who are active online, on social media, continues to sympathize Russia's position and Russia's movement in Ukraine, right? Mm-hmm. And as you know, in Twitter, many pro-Russian accounts has been widely shared information about Russia's position, and Indonesian seems, not defend, but even like not criticizing their position, right? I must be careful on identifying their positions. But how do you see this? Why do you think many Indonesians stand that way?
So first of all, I was initially quite surprised by the reactions of the Indonesian public, at least online. I thought that they would be more sympathetic towards Ukraine, because you know, there are several situations in the past where the Indonesian public actually supported, let's say, Palestine, Rohingya, and other in other cases. But then when I saw this during several webinars that I attended, and that also during discussions, online discussions, that there are those who are very, let's say, very vocal in their probably not supporting, but very sympathetic towards the Russian position. And I would say that there are several hypotheses that I can say that. First is this idea based on the narrative in social media that this is NATO's fault, this is the US fault, which brings me back to this idea that the anti-American attitude or anti-Western attitude in Indonesian society is quite prominent, especially after the war on terror. So it's one of the driver, I would say, because when you look at the narrative, the way they actually portrayed this Russian invasion is always Russia against US and NATO. There is no single mention, or maybe they focus too much on Russia and NATO, but not on Ukraine, which is, again, the countries being attacked. So that's one thing. That's why I say that I think this is part of this tendency. Since 2001, 2002, after the US attack on in Afghanistan and in Iraq, then there is this anti-American sentiment that is has been brewing again, but not really, how can I put it, not really put into action, like a demonstrations or massive demonstration. But now, because of social media, then they can actually say what they think about it. And also there is this idea that Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, is very popular in Indonesia as well. It's been likened to our former president Sukarno, very nationalistic, very populist, and a hyper-masculine, strong. I remember several years ago, there was this picture, I think it's a hoax picture of Putin riding a bear, but surplus. But it's been shared around Indonesian WhatsApp group again, and also in social media, that is very popular. So whatever Putin does, then yes, Indonesian, most Indonesian, at least in online and social media, they will just say, okay, we support Putin. So that's the second one. The third one is religion. Although, as I said in my article, religion is kind of problematic because of Russia's communist past or Soviet communism. And it's usually communism in Indonesian context is always being contrasted with Islam. So there are still people that think Russia is communist, even though now Communist Party is just maybe the second, the third party, biggest party, and it's only 10% votes in Russia anyway. But there are those people who think Russia is still communist, but there are also those people that believe this image of Russia as the ally of Islam, especially I think after 2013, 14, this public diplomacy from Russia is very effective to some extent. They use several websites like Russia Beyond the Headlines or the let's say the Instagram and Facebook account and Twitter account of the Russian embassy, trying to portray that in Russia, Muslims and Orthodox Christians live together happily. And then there is this picture of Ramzan Kadyrov, Chechen leaders, again, trying to send this message that Russia is friendly towards Islam. And I think that is part of the idea that Russia is now, instead of being a communist country, now it's become this ally of Islam. So you can see a very popular YouTube channel with 3 million subscribers putting forward this notion that Russia will be the ally of Islam at the end of the day. So like the Armageddon or something like that. So this is the start of the end of days. And Russia will be the ally of Islam. That's viral. And again, it brings the notion that, okay, so you have a nationalist anti-Western attitude. You have a strong hyper-masculine image of the president of Russia. And also this idea that now Russia is a friend of Islam combined together. And then you have scholars and public diplomacy efforts from Russia to put forward this notion that, again, Russia is defending itself. Russia is not attacking Ukraine. Russia is just trying to demilitarize Ukraine, whatever the Kremlin's point of view. They're just repeating this idea. Again, I think that's four of the main arguments that I put forward. Of course, it's not. It should be researched more, I would say, because again, you know that people in social media might not correlate with the actual, Indonesian people. They might be silent in social media, but they're actually supporting Ukraine, for example. But at least in social media, that's what I see, and that's what I thought about.
That's impressive. It's very interesting, the four arguments that you just explained to us. But I just want to ask as a follow-up question. Do you think it's also because the identity of the victim in this case, right? I mean, it's Ukraine, right? Maybe it's going to be different when we talk about some countries in the Middle East or mostly Islamic-based nations, right? Do you think it's going to tell a different story if Ukraine, for example, it's an Islamic-based nation?
Yes, I think that's very important because in 2015, I would say, 2015-16, when Russia, had this military operation or invasion to Syria, there are actually a lot of people in Indonesia, especially the Muslim community, had a massive demonstrations in Jakarta, condemning Russia's attack in Syria. So that's interesting. Again, when you put forward this notion of Islam being attacked, they are actually one voice in the Indonesian Muslim community, at least, that Russia is the enemy. But they are condemning Russia. But at this point, yes, I would say Ukraine is not really well known in Indonesia. I don't think that people know. it's very far. Again, it brings to my other small point in my article that there are a lack of Russia or East European specialists in Indonesian academic circles. So not even the public, but also the scholars. They don't know much about Ukraine. They don't know much about the situation in Eastern Europe. So it is logical for them to just see this conflict or this war as a war between Russia, which is very popular and very well, at least well known in Indonesia, and also US and NATO. So yes, that's one thing that I think, at least based on my discussion with several of the lecturers and professors as well, they said that not many people know about Ukraine. So if they know more, maybe they will be in a different position. Mm. But yeah, it's a counterfactual. So I don't know whether if people know about Ukraine, then they will start supporting Russia. Because again, Ukraine is not an Islamic country, even though there are, 2 million Muslims in Ukraine. The Ukrainian ambassador to Indonesia, has been trying to portray Ukraine as a friendly country to Islam, but it's not working at the moment because Russian image has been, well, they've done that efficiently since maybe 10 years ago. So,
yeah. Maybe there's also another aspect who supports stance by, you know, sort of propaganda of portraying that this is Zelensky's fault, right? This is because of the greediness of Zelensky, right? And anyways, but I'm interested to follow up on your earlier statement, Raditya. You're saying that there's a lack of understanding among scholars in Indonesia about Russia and Ukraine or maybe Eastern Europe, right? Maybe not many people like you who experience or now studying on Russian foreign policy. But as you know, Raditya, we see on TV, on social media, there are a lot of experts of international relations invited to share their thoughts. And it becomes a very clear, stage that all of the scholars here in Indonesia are pretty much divided. Right, and even many more influential scholars convey their thoughts and they defend Russia's positions. I don't want to mention any names here, but maybe you know some of them, right? Just want to know your thoughts on the quality of this analysis coming from Indonesian experts, or at least specifically international relations experts.
I mean, again, this is based on my personal experience. When I tried to study Russian foreign policy during my MA, this is the common narrative, or maybe the common knowledge or common idea in the Indonesian academic circle, that the next big thing, let me put it that way, is China, not Russia. So a lot of people are studying China, Chinese foreign policy, domestic politics, studying in China or in Taiwan. And Russia is not really is seen as this part of the relic of the Cold War. It won't be that important to Indonesia anyway. So there are obviously lack of scholars specifically studying Russian foreign policy. But there are those who are actually, or at least have finished their degree on Russian foreign policy. But just to answer your first question first, IR scholars in Indonesia, at least from what I saw online, again, webinars, I think maybe now is there are so many webinars on Russia and Ukraine conducted by a lot of university. And most of them are arguing the same thing. Most of them see this as, again, as this NATO, US against Russia is the return to Cold War. And that's very understandable, I would say, because they don't know that much about the situation in Eastern Europe. They don't know the perspective of Ukraine. They don't even know why Russia or Putin did this. From an IR point of view, it is very easy to go to this route of, okay, so this is just a balancing act by Russia. They try to change the world order, and this is NATO and US faults in the beginning, and Russia just responding to that. And I'm not going to accuse them of not delving deep enough, but that's just IR in a very, you know, when you don't know about the situation on the ground, then you just see the big pictures. And the big picture is always the great power politics between, again, in this case, between Russia and the US. And then just a little notes there. There are a lot of, as I said before, a lot of specialists, I would say, Russian specialists who studied in Russia, in Indonesia. I mean, Indonesian lecturers went to Russia. But, you know, as I've mentioned also in my article, it's very interesting when you put their story together with the Russian, let's say, Vladimir Putin speech. And then you can see the exact similarities. Basically, they're repeating what Putin already said. Again, I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but it is very interesting when you look at it and just see that, again, as the Ukrainian ambassador mentioned in one webinar, that they are repeating the Soviet argument at that time that Ukraine doesn't exist, that Ukraine is part of Russia. Well, what can you say? So also on the one hand, I would say that, yes, there are a lack of Russian specialists in the IR department, even if there are people who studied about Russia or Eastern Europe, mostly about Russia. They studied in Russia. And as we know that even the current situation in Russia, you can see that there are a lot of information being kept by the government. You cannot say anything that contradicts the government position. So you can see where they get that idea and that that argument about why Russia do this military operation, not invasion, not war, just a military operation. You can actually see the argument. So yes, so that's one thing that actually caused this whole mess, I would say whole mess in Indonesian public discourse, that you have the public that's not really knowledgeable on the context of the war. And the expert only see this as the West versus Russia, because that's what they know about using their IR perspective in a very global context. They couldn't move into a more detailed argument about why Russia did this and why Ukraine resists, why Zelensky is being very, anti-Russian, for example, why the Ukrainian people now is being more anti-Russian than before. They couldn't explain that, and they just move into the big picture.
Right.
Sorry, I'm going too long, but yes, basically
no problem. Right, and I think I somehow agree with you. And as we can see, right, some scholars are even over optimistic, right, towards Indonesia's positions, right, as a mediator, as a bridge solution, how to say it, as a peacemaker towards this problem. And so what's your message, Rady, to the listeners, at least here, to see or to get the right information, or at least avoid being trapped into a misleading information coming from the scholars? Do they need to be very selective, apart from listening to this podcast, for example, right? What's your message to them?
No, that's a good point. But yeah, I think one thing is, this will be very difficult because, again, I say in my article that we have a poor digital literacy in Indonesia. So they don't really, those listeners or those who read or listen to this argument by scholars, by the media, they don't really dig deep enough. So I would say the first thing is to try to look at it, to look at the report from the ground. This is one point that I've repeated in several webinars already. If you don't believe the Western media, that's fine. Again, because you know, in the past, this media probably has, you know, they have done their own version of events as well. But the solution is not to look at the Russian media, because it's just the same. It's even worse, because they actually put forward the government's position. So I think one way to do that is to look at the report from the independent journalists that are actually now in the war zone in Ukraine. I think there are a lot of Reddit or Twitter account that actually reported what happened in the ground. So you can see the current situation without depending on, again, the Western media or the Russian media. That's one thing. The second one would be, you know, try to look at it from the victim's point of view as well. You can believe, I'm not saying that the IR experts are wrong. They're quite right in that this conflict is part of this contestation between Russia and the West. That's one thing. But try to look at the deeper, or the Ukrainian position, for example, and try to understand why they act. Like, for example, they are trying to join NATO, and then many people, or including the experts, are saying that, oh, they shouldn't join NATO. They have to be neutral so that Russia won't attack them. Now trying to understand why Ukraine tried to join NATO. What is this fear of Russia? Why they are afraid of Russia? That's the thing that I think a logical mind would try to understand more. So not only accepting the idea that this is NATO and the West, or this is Russia, but also look at the other perspective. That's I think one thing that I can say. I'm not going to say that listen to, of course, listen to this podcast or listen to me. That's kind of self-promotion. But no, just look at it yourself. Try to look at the Ukrainian point of view, compare them with Russia, and then position yourself as a small country that has been, you know, experiencing this oppression from during the Soviet times, during the Russian occupation before, during the Tsarist Empire. And then you can see that there are more difficult, complicated situation, actually. This is not only about Russia and the West, but also about Ukraine, about how Ukraine view Russia. It's about how Russia view Ukrainians. How about Putin view Ukraine? About how Putin views his own safety, his regime safety, his regime survival opportunity in the next maybe 5-10 years. So there are, just try to look at a lot of different perspective in this, not only one I would say propagated by the so-called IR or famous IR experts that are just basically saying one and one thing only. That this is, again, anti-American and NATO faults, things like that. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. And I think, thank you so much for the suggestions to my listeners. My last question, Raditya. Mm-hmm. It's going to be on your reflection towards Indonesia's stance so far. As you know, that Indonesian government, through its Minister of Foreign Affairs, have chosen a position in the General Assembly, right, the voting. And I'm sure you've seen the public response coming from the ministry on Ukraine-Russia conflict. What's your reflection? Any criticism towards government stance?
First of all, I understand their hesitancy. Again, this a conflict that is quite far, a war, an invasion that is quite far from Indonesia. And it includes one of the big power, Russia, in this case. So I understand their hesitancy. So they initially, they're just saying, condemning, not even condemning, they're saying that this conflict must be stopped. Again, vague statements that not even mentioning Russia, even though they're actually condemning Russian aggression in the UN General Assembly and also this High Commissioner on Human Rights. So that's my first point. I understand why they're trying very hard to be in the middle. But let me point out my criticism then. It's always a lot of analysts as well, a lot of scholars already criticizing the government, even though the government has done basically nothing. They just follow the UNGA resolution, and they are already criticizing the Indonesian government for being anti-Russian, or at least not being in the middle. I would say that the idea of Indonesian foreign policy from the very beginning, in 1953 or 48, this kind of independence and active foreign policy is never constructed as a form of neutrality. If you or the listener can read Muhammad Hatta's article in Foreign Affairs, 1953, titled Indonesia's Foreign Policy, you can see exactly that he said independent doesn't mean neutral. We cannot be neutral, but we have to improve our to reflect our solidarity. And this idea of solidarity to all those oppressed people in the world, of course, it cannot be done during the Cold War because there are only two blocks, but now it's not about Cold War anymore. This isn't a return, just a return to Cold War. There is a country under attack that is not part of the alliance, not part of NATO. So there is no, I would say this is the duty of Indonesia to be at least, if not supporting Ukraine, they have to condemn Russia. Strongly, that's the idea. And not only saying that, okay, we favor the UNGA resolution, or we also vote for the independent commission of the UN Human Rights Commission, but you have to condemn Russia. And that's the last government in 2014, during the Crimea annexation, the Indonesian government at that time rejected Russian claim to Crimea. And until now, the Indonesia doesn't recognize Crimea as part of Russia. So, and fine, that's fine. You can see, I was there when the Russian ambassador, I think 3 weeks ago, just before the invasion, or maybe a month. So like a month or 3 weeks ago, she was asked whether she regrets Indonesian position on Crimea. And then she said, no, that's just Indonesian foreign policy. We respect Indonesian position. So, well, of course, that could be a formal diplomatic answer to the question. But I would say Indonesia now has to show this solidarity towards the victim, as we have been supporting Palestine, Rohingya, or maybe even Iraq at that time. So Indonesia had to at least condemn Russia. Show support to Ukraine, probably not supporting the sanction, again, because the sanction is very, very delicate, and I would say controversial. The current sanctions by the West or by the EU and the US is quite controversial because of the scope. So maybe not supporting the sanction, but have to condemn Russia and show that we are independent. So we don't bow to the US, but we also don't bow to Russia. that's I think that's the very important, because people already say, oh, we shouldn't listen to the US. I remember there was one, I think, report that say the US ambassador to Indonesia called Indonesian foreign minister after the vote in UNGA. And then people said, oh, so we Indonesia now are supporting the US position. But yeah. By doing the opposite, we will support the Russian position, because if we stay silent and if we abstain, that means we are supporting the Russian position, because the status quo is Russia attacking Ukraine. So, you know that we cannot really, if we don't want to support Russia, then we have to condemn Russia. That's, I think that's very simple. And that's also part of our independent foreign policy. Again, not neutral, not in the middle. That's one thing. So we are never in the middle. We can choose positions based on our principles. And our principles here should be supporting the victim and at least try to push Russia to move back and then negotiate after. So I think that's my again, my criticism towards the Indonesian government. But I know that it's a very delicate subject for the Indonesian government because of Russia's investment in Indonesia. But, you know, should we sacrifice our principles on solidarity towards the victim or towards the oppressed just for the sake of economic investment? That's another question. And that's the thing that the Indonesian government had to answer.
Right. And I mean, it's always a big question when it comes to an actual manifestation of Indonesia's free and effective foreign policy, right? And it comes to this case now when there is a crisis that involves great powers, right? Russia, yes, US, yes. EU is there. It's not even China, but I'm not sure whether it will have a crisis, for example, in Taiwan, right? Involving Taiwan, yes, and China, and how do we need to position ourselves at the end. But thank you so much, Raditya, for exploring about this topic, right? Understanding Indonesia's or Indonesians' position and feeling towards the crisis. Thank you so much for
your time. Thank you. Thank you for the invitation and thank you for the discussion. It has been a pleasure.
Right. Hopefully, listeners get a lot of insights from you and maybe can, reach out to you and then ask more if
possible. Yes, I will be very open for any kind of discussion and questions. You can find me on Instagram or in email or LinkedIn.
Right, and keep up the good work.
I don't have Twitter.
Right, no problem. But yes. Let me know if you have a further analysis on the crisis, and please be safe in Estonia.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Let me close the discussion, and thank you, everybody.